proudly to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:05 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday from 6 until 8 a.m. right here on News 104.5 WOKV. I'm joined by the big guy, Sasquatch, the Yeti, 6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspections, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on Home and Garden TV and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. 855-765-1045. One more time, slower, for those of you in public education. 855-765-1045. Larry, it's only fair to say I am a product of public education.
So am I.
K through 12, then United States Naval Academy. Uh-huh. Thank you very much to public education for the mind I have today.
Right, right. It's public education.
You were all
good.
Public educated too, yeah?
Yeah.
There we go.
Hey, you know,
what's new in the yard?
You know, the yards were exhausted this, summer, late spring because of the heat. And how do you get your yard looking good again after that? You know, you want to put, some nitrogen down, of course, but, the best way to approach it is on the organic approach, go to the local, your local Home Depot or Lowe's. The best stuff is to reuse that sludge, the stuff they process is commonly known as mill organite.
Right here produced by JEA. Green Edge.
Green Edge.
Yeah.
And you can go to Home Depot or Lowe's and get a couple bags of those. They're not, going to burn the grass. They're going to build the soil. There's so many great things about when you use organic fertilizer. And, put a couple applications on those. So, you can be generous with the amount. And the key thing is to be generous. So if you have a small yard, maybe two bags, you want a good amount of coverage. You don't have to worry about the amount that you're putting on, as long as you're not, piling on, it's 2 inches thick.
Reading the directions would be a novel approach, sure.
Yeah, but this is the only thing I throw, this is to get some effect. You got to follow directions. That would be the minimum amount you put on. But you can put more than...
So we're suggesting reading the directions.
Yes.
Though the consequence of imperfect distribution is not intense.
Not intense. There I use go. It on nematode control
afraid.
All the time. If there's a bad spot in the lawn, I put it down a generous amount, and it does amazing results. But that would be my first step. The second step is, make up my own... biostimulant or whatever you want to call it, your witch's brew here. But some of the things I do when I get a little backpack sprayer, about 5 gallons, and this is for the lawn guys, get some chelated iron and humic acid and some fish emulsion and kelp if you got it available to you. Put it again, the directions are important, yes. On this, but the organic fertilizers, they're not as critical because they're not a high amount of nitrogen. There's not a high amount of anything in there, but
it's a kindler, friendlier product.
Yes, a kindler, friendlier product. So you want to mix that up and, in your 5 gallon backpack sprayer and put it about, maybe 3 applications on there of,
And what frequency? What's the space between applications?
About once every, week.
Once a week.
Once a week. And you're going to see amazing green up like you've never seen before. And also, it's going to make it more sustainable. When you have, a great soil, your plants actually become more efficient. So, the mycorrhizas, all these things become more enhanced or in growing environment, they become more efficient. So what you normally would put down, let's say 20 pounds, let me see, 26 on the nitrogen, you know, you could probably get away with 5 because the soil is much more efficient. And when you use humic acid in your fertilizer, it also makes it more efficient. So get that out, put that on your, put it on your lawn if you're do-it-yourselfer, and you're going to have some amazing results. And I just was working on a project where a lady had nematodes in her yard for, 5 or 6 years at least. And she had these big spots, you know, where no matter what, you know, you replace it, it gets weak.
But if you replace the sod without diagnosing the source and killing the nematodes,
it dies again.
You're just bringing fresh food.
Yeah, fresh food, basically.
For the nematode.
And it's those little spots that just will not go away. Okay. And, you know, I also told her we could dig them up or we can do the mill organite fish emulsion treatment. And
that just overpowers the nematode.
They don't like organic soil.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, but they don't like it at all. She called me, or I called her the other day and asked her how it was going. She says the spots that were always looking terrible for at least the last 5 or 6 years are completely recovered. Huh. And they're the darkest green spots in her yard, which
all the nitrogen.
All the again, it goes to the point of, you know, making your soil more healthy using the mill organite. We went to Home Depot and got some of that, and then got some fish emulsion.
What eats nematodes? Will worms eat nematodes?
There's other nematode attacking nematodes. Yes. Huh. Yeah, there is. There, you can buy them and put them on your lawn, but I feel that the best way to get rid of nematodes is you can solarize and you can buy some nematode applications. But in a home, you know, where it's small area, the best way is to apply organic fertilizer. It really, with some frequency, and it really knocks down the population.
Overpower them.
They just don't like it at all. And so, you know, that's the one way to solve the nematode problem, and also to get the lawn looking correct. But just one bag of mill organite is only going to be about maybe $12.
That's cheap.
So that's $24 to do your front yard, and then the other stuff, the humic acid, that's going to be a little bit. The chelated iron's around 10, 15. The kelp's a little bit expensive, but that's enough right there for maybe a couple years if you buy one of those. So you're talking about, you know, or if you want to go organic in the spring, you can do the same thing. And also, a winter application of this, your lawn often doesn't even turn brown. You know, I've had lawns that I've looked at where they put down the mill organite and the humic acid and the chelated iron and the kelp in the winter, before winter, and it just stayed green all winter long.
Still got to water it.
Yeah, you still got to water it, but it just makes it much more cold resistant. You know, we're working on a landscape, trying to, you know, 2-3 landscapes in a row where they have these gigantic viburnum or they've got these shrubs that they're pruning, you know, at least 4 or 5 times a month now because of the rain, and then they're just getting out of control. So the guy asked me, what is the best way to approach this? I'm tired of pruning. You know, he does his own lawn work. There's some shrubs out there that should not need to be pruned more than a couple times a year. And so we're planting some of those in his landscape. But, you know, make sure when you're purchasing shrubbery, people always are attracted to the largest plant in the container. And that means that the plant's a fast grower. It's going to be nothing but trouble in the long run, especially if you're doing your own lawn work. And if you're hiring somebody, he's going to have to add those hours in to pruning, cleaning up all your debris.
If you like that look, though, you pretty much are committed.
Yeah. And then another thing is that the landfills are filled up with landscaping material. I think it's 20 or 30% of the dumping is landscape material. So if you want to do your civic duty and reduce the amount of debris in a landfill, that's one way to do it. But here's some low pruning shrubs that don't. Wheeler's dwarf is a pittosporum that only needs to be pruned, I would say, once every 2 years.
Wow.
Once every 2 years.
My kind of plant.
Yeah. It's evergreen, stays low growing, getting only about two feet tall. That's a great plant.
Can you use it as a hedge if you get a lot of them or not?
Well, the next ones you could use, that's just for, if you, you know, a lot of times these newer buildings have a low window.
Right.
The windows are lower to the ground. This would be the one to plant instead of having a viburnum, the otismus there. Walter's viburnum would be the next level up. a native plant. Miss Schiller's is a dwarf, and getting around 2 to 5 foot maximum height. When the shrub at the maximum height is 5 foot versus Viburnum otismus, which is 35 feet, or for Southern Indica azalea, which is 14 feet, you're going to have a much slower growing shrub, easier to control. And Walter's Viburnum Schiller is the dwarf variety. It's going to have beautiful flowers, has nice leaves like a boxwood. And what are the negatives of Walter's Viburnum? It really doesn't have any. Not too many diseases, not too many insects. You know, there's no negatives on Wheeler's dwarf, no negatives on Mrs. Schiller's. Tough, tough plant. Drought resistant.
And who is Mrs. Schiller?
Mrs. Schiller. I don't know. They named it after her. Huh. But I'll have to look that up. That's a good question.
Thank you.
But then Robin Holly is another. Any of the red hollies, if you have like Nellie R. Stevens, that's a pruning nightmare. You have to prune that thing a lot. And it opens up. It means it gets rangy looking. These stay nice and compact. I have Robin Holly myself. I think I've pruned it in the last 5 years twice. So a very, very, very slow growing, nice compact, not rangy at all. Carissa Holly is another great. The negative on Rollin Holly, I guess I want to say the negatives, is that any kind of holly, is this particular one, can get T-scale, but they're easy to control. The Carissa Holly, not so much on the T-scale, again, getting around 2 to 3 feet. Again, pruning maybe once every 2 years. You know, that's, you get it planted out there and you walk away. How about that? You know, that's the best way to do it.
Set it and forget it. It sounds like Ron Kapil.
Right. You're never pruning. And then you put in some azolla lawn, you're mowing every 2 weeks. Chinsen azalea, you know, it's again another azalea, the small grower, around getting around 1 to 2 feet, about 5 feet in diameter. That's it gets it really large. And Camellia sasanqua, they're a beautiful plant, enjoy pruning very slow. They accept pruning very slow growers. And you know, the negative on them, again, the holly, the camellias can occasionally get T scale, but easy to control. Boxwood, of course, is our favorite plant. You know, you get Morris midget, which is a boxwood that we planted at these this one client's house, and we have done the maintenance there for maybe around 10 years. I think the boxwood in 10 years, Morris midget, was pruned not more than maybe 3 times. So there's a great boxwood, nice, dense, doesn't get leggy, slow growing. And it's a
I will consider line. That. You know, that set it and forget it. You know the origin of that term?
What was
set
that?
It and forget it. Ron Papil, Ronco, making
Ronco, right?
Yep, made the rotisserie oven. And the man was an absolute. He was a genius. Here's his backstory.
Ronco.
So Ron Papil grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey. He's older than us.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was they call him a carnival barker, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
Down at the Jersey Shore.
Pitchman.
Yep. He was a pitchman. They'd set up on the boardwalk.
Yeah,
and sell knives or whatever they had to sell at that particular time. And he was like the best.
Yeah, he was.
And he was from a whole family that was their family business, was setting up various boardwalks and selling knives, kitchen appliances, and other stuff. And he decided that it would be far more profitable if he had his own products to sell.
Right.
And when TV came, that he made that transition. He was one of the first guys to really do an infomercial.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever seen the Ronco rotisserie oven.
Yeah, I remember that one.
The front glass door is not truly vertical. It's tilted back at about a 25-degree angle. And people look at that and they go, you know, why? Why did they do that? Why is the oven front door, the rotisserie front door, not vertical like every other oven? Why is it tilted back? And the reason they did that was for the camera angle to show the chicken in the rotisserie. So it wasn't functional item.
He was looking at every angle. Well, at least he was smart and intuitive.
Yep.
Yeah.
They couldn't get, when they were shooting these early infomercials for that rotisserie oven, they couldn't get a good shot that felt right on TV.
Right.
Inside the rotisserie with a vertical door, so they just made the whole thing.
You know, now I come to think about it, a lot of them are made like that now.
Yeah.
They're tilted back so you can look in there into the into the oven.
Right.
You know, when you're standing up looking into it.
But the original purpose wasn't so you or I could look into it. It was they could get the right camera angle.
Right.
And make the chicken look good. And he became immensely wealthy.
Right.
And the pocket fisherman was also one of his.
Oh, the pocket fisherman.
The
little, right. I
remember
that
fishing pole that you could make longer.
Ronco
Papil. He has an autobiography or biography. Fantastic read if you enjoy product development and marketing and TV. It's 6:20 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Show 625 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. I'm Wallace Conway. Larry O'Neill is here from Larry's Garden. And we are checking in with dear Miss Cynthia to see if we can find her a fast-growing shade tree. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Thank you. What do you want that shade tree to do? You want to sit under it and sip martinis, or do you want it to cast shade on the window?
Just shade to be able to sit out in the backyard.
Yeah.
I've got a good shade tree on one side, but in the afternoon sun, my shade goes away, and of course, the afternoon is when we want to sit out there and enjoy the shade.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's, golly, I wish you'd never asked that question. There's so many trees I like. You know,
fast grower, affordable.
I think a great looking shade tree. You know, of course, I don't mind, you know, a little bit of debris from trees because they make debris. But I love the sycamore. Sycamore is the reason I like a sycamore tree. They make those little balls and, you know, they drop them, little seed pods.
Itchy balls.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But the problem, the good thing about sycamore is that you can grow grass under it because it's filtered light. You know, it's not like an oak tree that gets, you know, oh, just black darkness shade. But the sycamore is a good tree, too. Drake elm is a fairly good, fast growing tree, too.
The Drake elm, okay.
The only problem with Drake elms is that you've got to make sure it's sheltered from the wind. You know, because they have a tendency to, you know, they have weak root system and a large head. You know, their canopy's large, oversized for the strength of their root system. So,
you know, one we had last week or the week before was the idea of growing a circle of bamboo.
Yeah, you could do that.
And that's very fast, and you'll have shade from all sides.
Angles. Right.
You'll be quiet, secluded.
If you got a big enough yard, we were talking about first it started out with trees, you know, a circle of trees, and then the bamboo, if you wanted quick results, let's say you wanted to have shade and full-grown shade in less than 18 months, then that would be the solution. You would create a circle, and then you pave the circle inside of it. You know, you can use pavers or anything, and you plant bamboo spaced out around the perimeter. And the bamboo, you could plant a 3-gallon bamboo, and you would have the project would be at 90% completion in 18 months if you watered and fertilized. That's how fast it is. You know, that's the fastest, next to kelp, it's the fastest growing plant on the face of the earth. You know what I mean? So it grows very fast when you water and fertilize in its, let's say if I took a 3-gallon bamboo container with a stalk that was maybe 3 feet tall, 2 feet tall, had two canes sticking out of the ground 2 to 3 feet tall. I watered and fertilized it. In 18 months, it would be 12 feet tall, dense. That's how fast it grows.
It'd be quiet in there, too.
Quiet, super private. It has a great structural look, you know, if you like that. And it doesn't need to be pruned. It doesn't have any weeds underneath it. And it makes its own mulch. You know, it mulches itself. There's nothing that can really grow under bamboo. I've dug bamboo one time in my life, and I don't want to ever do it again. You know, because
it's something when you plant it, it stays put.
Yes, this is the I don't recommend people plant the rhizome type, which they grows all around and fills out the whole world.
It's a clumpers.
But these are clumpers, right. You know, you can use Bambusa texillus gracilis, Demercalis. You can use several different types of Bambusa. You know, they're out there.
That's an affordable project, too, yeah.
Yeah, it's fairly affordable. Bamboo is expensive. It is expensive, but it's worth every nickel of it if you like it, because it gets up fast. I mean, so I would never buy a 30-gallon container of a bamboo because it would be as astronomical.
I couldn't lift it.
You couldn't lift it, and it's super expensive, a 30-gallon. 3-gallon, 7-gallon is all you need, and a little bit of patience and a hose and a little bit of nitrogen. And that stuff would grow. It's grass. Basically, it's grass. You know how fast grass grows. So it's basically the same group as grass, you know.
Well, you got your plan there, Cynthia.
You can use sycamore for tradition, Drake elm for your traditional look, or the bamboo cedar.
It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News, traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 6:36, people, Saturday morning. Grateful, grateful, grateful that you are with us. What makes this show so much fun for us is having you be a part of it. Whether you are listening here on terrestrial radio, News 104.5, WOKV, the WOKV app, the WOKV website, WOKV.com, that is, on Facebook at Wally Conway or Home Pro Inspections, on YouTube, on LinkedIn. We have gone intergalactic. So far, the most distant callers we have experienced with this new live stream event. We've had live callers from Australia, live callers from France, and our fantasy, the fantasy of the Home and Garden Show, myself and Larry as well, is to have a caller from the International Space Station. So if you've got a friend, a neighbor, a cohort, a connection at the International Space Station, please forward them the number 855-765-1045, and you can make a dream come true for Larry and I when the fellas at the space station, and the ladies, actually, there's boys and girls up there now, the astronauts call in and ask us their space-age home and garden questions. We'd love to have that. Now, back down to Earth, nothing frustrates you more than playing in the yard, playing in the woods, and getting a little bit of poison ivy, and apparently that's been Mark's problem.
Ow.
Mark, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Good morning, guys. Can you hear me okay?
You sound awesome.
Okay, great. I sent a picture to Larry. I don't know if you've had time to look at it, Larry, of a tree, a couple of trees that are being overcome by poison ivy, big vines all the way up the tree. And I'm just wondering, what's the best way to get rid of that without getting it all over me?
Well, you can, you know, if it's on, if the vine is on the bark, you can spray it with Brush Killer by Ortho.
Spray it with soft water.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That won't kill it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it won't probably kill it.
I could try some straight salt, but I don't know if that would
that
kill
would
it.
That would work. So. That would work and kill everything else. But you can spray with Brush Killer by Ortho, or you could take the Brush Killer by Ortho, put it in a smallest jar you can, cut the vine. Of course, you got to make sure you have your gloves on because you know, you get everything out. You're going to be sore for a while, but if you don't. But take that, the end of the vine that you cut, and immerse it in the Ortho Brush Killer, and kind of have put a little piece of made plastic over the top where you can punch through it, and then let it stay in there, and that will translocate the herbicide into the root system, and it should kill it permanently.
Okay.
You know, it's a little bit complicated. But I mean, you put a little piece of plastic over there, punch a hole through there, you slide the vine in there. But when it works perfect, you know, and it just takes time. And there's not that continually trying to pull it off, pull it off, pull it off, spray it, pull it off. You know, it's the continual battle, you know.
I've got a question for Mark.
Sure.
Well, to be fair, I recognize your voice from Affordable Water, our good friend's Affordable Water Jacks, Mark Kinder.
Yes, sir.
Larry and I have been on a campaign of education about water quality and what things truly mean in the water quality business. As you've seen there at Affordable Water, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors and very candidly, Mark, some shady sales practice that goes on that relates to fear and bad science, what President Trump might call fake news. Yes?
Correct.
From your perspective as a licensed professional, as truly the regional expert on these matters, what in simple layperson's terms, so I can understand it, is the fundamental difference between water softening and water conditioning?
Water conditioning is when you put something in addition to the softener when you have a filter like a carbon filter. Some companies are now using KDF. That's ground up metal that filters out chlorine. I prefer carbon. And the thing is it absorbs into the carbon, the chlorine, the chemicals for taste and odor. However, I was in a house yesterday and they were told they didn't even have to worry about boil your water notices with carbon at the whole house level, which is not true. I don't know if you want to get that far into it, Wally, but that is when you have to go to a low micron filtration to get that organism, and that is under sink systems.
So
and
you can be like a reverse osmosis system? Is that what
or even a carbon block filter that goes to under 1 micron, like the ones we sell are a half micron. And the thing is that it filters low enough to where you wouldn't have to worry about it during a boil water notice. Of course, when the boil is lifted, you want to change the filter so nothing can grow in the filter.
Right.
But the end of the story is a lot of systems are sold by people putting filters on whole house level, and they're calling it a purifier. They're also only doing the filter and not using the resin and calling it a water softener. So there's a lot of misrepresentation. And the bottom line is you want to make sure that you use somebody licensed and they can test for it. And as you've covered before in your show, you can test for hardness. Yes. And if they're calling it a water conditioner and it doesn't take out hardness, it is not softening the water. It is not a full water conditioner. It's only a filter. A filter takes out chemicals. A softener takes out hardness.
That's about as simple as it gets. Less than 1 grain per gallon is the definition of soft water. And what's the average in our area? 17 grams?
17 grains per gallon, correct.
Which is defined as extremely hard.
Off the chart.
You know, knowledge is a powerful thing, Mark. I feel smarter every time I talk to you.
We have the hardest water in the whole southeast and the eastern seaboard, Jacksonville, northeast Florida. So
I guess that's something to be proud of.
Well, that's why I'm in business here. Credit to your service.
All right, Mark.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate you. Have a beautiful day.
Good luck with the poison ivy. Be careful.
Yeah. When I was a young guy playing in the woods, I used to play in the woods a lot. We'd build forts and all that.
Uh-huh.
And, man, my super sensitive body, poison ivy.
Super sensitive body.
I get poison ivy between my fingers.
Oh, my gosh.
And it would be like my fingers didn't even touch between them any longer.
Oh, yeah.
Giant water-filled or whatever they were. I guess it's water.
Blisters.
The blisters. And, oh, my gracious.
It's histamine in there.
And, yeah, my mom, she taught me to do it. And then I started doing it myself as I got older. I'd puncture those blisters and all that stuff would come out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they weren't scabs, but it would dry and crack. And, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Poison ivy is very painful for some people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Put you in the hospital, some people.
I wouldn't say it was all the way that painful, but it was extremely uncomfortable.
Right.
And then one year I managed to get it in my all over my eyelids.
Oh, God.
And I couldn't see, and then I'm puncturing these big blisters on my eyes.
Oh, my God. You got to be careful. There is a tremendous amount of poison ivy.
And
you should learn to identify, especially if your house is backed up against any woods. There's just gigantic amounts of it.
And other people aren't susceptible at all. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I had a worker. He could roll in it.
Yeah.
He could roll in it. I mean, anytime we were going to a poison ivy place, he'd go in there and he'd pull on it and yank it down and everything. He might get one small bump on him. That was about it. Nothing.
I've heard people have a level of sensitivity that when they're burning underbrush.
It's very bad for you to burn.
That can damage your nasal passage, your lungs, and whatnot if you're susceptible.
It's like burning pressure treated wood. You shouldn't do that.
Different reasons, but bad also.
Very, very bad.
One's chemical, one's biologic. Yeah. It's pretty crazy stuff.
You got to be careful out there when you're cleaning out those woods area if you don't want to be debilitated for a while.
Calamine lotion.
Calamine. They have some new stuff out where if you know that you've been exposed, you could wash with that.
Really?
You know, and it should reduce or eliminate.
This was like 50 years ago.
Yeah, calamine lotion was the only thing you could do in those days. Yeah. But you can touch it, and then you could touch other parts of your body and transfer it over.
I've had that happen too, but I wasn't going to talk about it.
I won't touch that one.
Thank you for not touching that one. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're going out in the yard and you're cleaning out wild areas, always do an inspection. And, it's a three leaf. It's a three leaves versus a lot of times people have Virginia creeper, which is looks similar, but it's the five leaves on that. And then the poison ivy's got that three leaves. And oftentimes has, it depends on the time of year, can have berries on it. So caution is definitely,
oh, that necessary. Could be bad.
Oh, yeah.
Eat the berry.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't know what happened to you that.
Your gums but, and inside of your cheeks all swollen up. Right. That'd be hard.
You know,
it could be the berry doesn't pass along that same, toxin.
Yes. You know, we have a lot of people always putting gravel down. We always get called out about gravel. Should we put gravel? They're tired of mulching. You know, they want to get rid of the mulching. They want to talk about rubber mulch,
Don't
like rubber mulch. And it's kind of fallen from grace.
Good.
It is kind of ugly. You know, it's just, it was this end-all solution for mulch. You know, just do it one time. But gravel is, you know, natural products always look better, when you're working in the yard. So gravel is a solution to some of the negative things about gravel. Does raise the soil temperature, you know, because, you know, it absorbs heat. You know, that would be the negative thing. The cost of the gravel is going to be expensive. It's going to be and will become cost neutral in about 3.5 years. But one of the things that people always do, which is a gigantic mistake, this is, you know.
Too thin.
Too thin. Not too thin is they don't put down a weed barrier over and over again.
Yeah, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, you got to have a weed barrier. You got to have a weed barrier. I went to a place last weekend, and didn't have a weed barrier. And the gravel, you know, they probably spent maybe, I estimate around $6,000 on gravel. And the gravel was completely inundated with weeds. I mean, it looked worse than if it hadn't, you know, been out in the woods, you know. So without a weed barrier, you know, don't do it. Don't do it without an edging. And then once a year, you want to make sure you get the best pre-emergent and spray it into that area, because that was going to block any plants from germinating.
Good.
You know, and so that's a successful technique. If you're going to dig in that area, make sure that you do not put any dirt back into that area. You want to keep that area sterile. Keep any dirt out of that area, because in every cubic foot of dirt, there's about 500 dormant seeds.
Can you use salt in that?
Yeah, but the plants in that area are not going to like that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So if there's no plants, you know, it's not a problem. Yeah, how much weed barrier should you put down? I mean, if you can afford it, you know, and if you want to do the extra time, you should put at least two or maybe three layers of weed barrier down. If you have plants in those areas, you maybe not want to have the weed, one layer of weed barrier around the plant. And then when you go around it, and you extend out more than, say, 2 foot from the plant, then you can go back to
the weed barrier is permeable. The water will still
percolate. Right.
Okay.
Water will percolate, but do not put down gravel if you don't have a weed barrier.
I really like a nice,
any circumstance,
nice gravel driveway.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Sound of like if you have a Ferrari.
We do a lot of gravel driveways.
Sound of the Ferrari engine, and then the sound of the gravel beneath the tires. Right. It just feels like wealth.
We had we worked out in this one area in Mandarin where they have all these oak trees, just huge amounts of them. And we put one gravel driveway in because they've already replaced the driveway once and they want to do it again. And I drove by in 5 years to look at the driveway, see what the results, how it looked and everything, long term. And there was at least 5 or 6 gravel driveways.
Really?
In the neighborhood. Yeah. So if you put the gravel in and you pack well, it's good. We're all walking surface.
You know, as the root rises.
Yeah.
Well, you just have a little bit of a.
You could be a little hump there, but I mean, you just fill in with some gravel. You know, that's easy. You know, just grate it out, fill a little bit of gravel in there.
Kind of go uphill a little bit.
Yeah, usually the tree doesn't do that. I didn't notice any of that. That's why.
Now, why would the tree root want to lift the concrete drive?
Well,
and not lift the gravel.
The concrete drive is below the surface. You know, it could be 6 inches below the surface.
Yeah.
And it's traveling below the surface. The root's traveling below the surface, and then it starts lifting the driveway. I did go by a couple concrete driveways. I did. Maybe 6 years ago, no cracks.
Nope. Well, gravel is one giant crack. It's 8 billion cracks.
No cracks, but again, no cracks on the concrete driveways. And again, the expansion joints. Expansion joints. You get expansion joint happy. I looked at a couple driveways that are not done by me, but another company, and the expansion joints were perfect. And guess what? 20 years later,
looking
no
good.
Cracks.
It's 6:50 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right on the phones. Loving hearing from you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 6:57. Beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. Should you decide that landscaping is just too hard to do on your own, which I have decided, it's too hard for me, check out larrysgarden.com. Got the blog, got the video, frequently asked questions, all sorts of good things there. Frankly, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, there may well be enough great ideas at larrysgarden.com to just do it on your own. Then should you decide, I really want to get at least a design done, consider Larry's Garden. Or I just want the hardscape done, consider Larry's Garden. Or you can have Larry's Garden do the whole darn thing if you like. Should you decide to speak on the telephone with Larry after viewing all the goodies at larrysgarden.com, that phone number is 346-1970. If you're Palm Coast and Gainesville and all those other outlying areas, 904-346-1970. 700 people in the greater Jacksonville area within the sound of my voice from Palm Coast and all the surrounding areas. Over 700 people will purchase homes this weekend. The wise, the wonderful, and the fortunate will choose Home Pro Inspections. To get a hold of Home Pro Inspections, go HomePro.com. Operator standby 24/7 can take care of everything with one phone call.
And get yourself a home warranty.
There you go.
18-month home warranty.
Home inspection, home warranty, WDO, and all the other goodies. The phone number, 268-8211. Palm Coasters, 904-268-8211. It's 6:59. Fox News Traffic Weather and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Right back. Good morning. 7:07 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday right here on News 104.5 WOKV from 6 until 8 a.m. The show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. Larry brings us 20-plus years of experience toiling in the soil. Hardscape, landscape, ponds, trees, weeds. Makes the weeds go away.
Yes.
And it also features me, Wally Conway, from Home Pro Inspections, 20-plus years inspecting houses, and just sharing good thoughts together. That's what we do. The fun part of the show for us is your input, your calls, your commentary. That number is 855-765-1045. The call is toll-free, and also you may be listening at the WOKV app, the WOKV.com website, Facebook live stream, as well as YouTube, LinkedIn. We are all over the galaxy, so we're all excited to have you with us. Earlier in the show, we were chatting about removal of poison ivy. One of the risks of removing poison ivy is getting poison ivy.
Yes.
Been looking for some remedies. Got Donnie checking in with an idea how to make it a little less poor. Welcome, okay, Donnie.
Good morning. Love the show.
Thank you.
This is experience talking here.
Okay.
Z-A-N-F-E-L. It's a poison ivy cream.
Oh, yes.
Z-A-N-F-E-L. Got it. Do I need a prescription?
No, over the counter.
Over the counter. So, yeah, it's a good idea, that you even, if you know you're going to be working on poison ivy, just put it on before you go out there. You know what I mean?
Well, if you get it and all over your body, put the cream on as it says, and if you miss a spot, go back and it's over.
Yeah. They've done a lot of research. I've never used any of those products, but they're out there, and I do appreciate you calling in.
I just had a flashback.
Let us know about those things that are successful. Yes.
I think my mom put me in like an oatmeal bath once.
Yes.
Yeah.
That'll work too.
Yeah.
It's nothing like this new stuff.
This is like a miracle thing.
Yeah,
this is
like the new stuff. This new stuff comes out. You put it on there, and you've touched it. It will knock it out.
So the poison ivy treatment, Zanzel, Z-A-N-S-E-L. L. Thank you for that, Donna.
No. It is an S. It's F, like Frank.
Z-A-N-F-E-L.
Zanfell, yes.
That's the guy that plays the pan flute.
Right?
Zamfir, master of the pan flute.
Okay.
Okay, guys. You have a great day.
Thanks, appreciate you.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, let's then transition over to Hilliard, check in with Shane to see if we can help him transplant his trees. Shane, what type trees are you transplanting?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
They're live oaks.
Live oaks?
Live oaks, okay.
How big?
How big?
Yes,
sir.
Yes, sir. They're, it's about 60 feet above sea level. It's a large sand hill, the whole area is. And there's beautiful live oaks on it. And I want to transplant all the volunteers, not all, but some of the volunteers that are there. And they range from 1 foot up to, you know, shoulder high, maybe 4 foot. And what's the best time of year and then kind of method for doing that?
Well, you know, any time of the year is good, you know, on live oaks. And they're not so big that they're going to be problematic. You know, you can do now, you know, if you like to. The leaves may turn brown, but as long as you keep the water on them, you know, and that's every day. That you'll be good, but if you don't do that, they're going to be goners. 4 foot, no problem. All these are good. I mean, ideally, you do it in the winter. It's a little less dramatic on the plant, and there's a little less watering to do. But you can do it any time of the year.
Less intense for the guy digging the hole too.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 95 degrees. Yes. Absolutely. But then after you plant them, you know, wait about a week, put a little bit of fertilizer on them. But the main thing is getting water on them. That's the main thing. Okay. Getting it watered every single day.
What kind of fertilizer do you recommend for?
I'll just use some general, you know, liquid fertilizer, because it's the only reason I like that is because it's quick acting and it goes right into the system and gets a restart. You can use a Miracle-Grow, and again, Fish Emulsion, I love that as a transplant shock. You can use also Super Thrive. It would, if I'm, you know, there's some dispute of whether it works or not, but I've used it myself and it's good for transplanting when you have a low probability of success. You know, some trees have low probabilities of success, so you use that on them, and that will probably give you about maybe 50% better rate. So you can use some of that. You can buy it in a small container at Home Depot or Lowe's. All right?
Yes, sir. All right. I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, then.
Thanks. Good luck with it.
You've got some work cut out.
Thanks. Have a good day.
All right. Ants. Ever get ants in your pants? I've had that happen, too. Poison ivy, ants in my pants. Yeah. Man, growing up, I had so many challenges. Oh. Jeff in Mandarin, what kind of ants have you got, and where are they, sir?
Fire ants, front yard, backyard. I usually just have, like, one hill at a time, and I treat it, and they just move right next door about 3 feet over from the old pile. I know I'm not getting the queen yet. How do I get down that far without destroying my lawn?
You know, fire ants eat termites.
Fire ants are good. And if you live in a wild area and you have ticks, don't leave the fire ants alone, because they are voracious predators.
Termites, ticks, yeah.
They'll eat anything, but any insect.
They also eat people.
Yes, they bite. You know,
that's the problem I don't want.
Yes. The thing with fire ants, what I would tell you to get is go online and get this ant or insecticide called Top Choice. What it does is that you general application over your whole lawn, and it binds with the soil. Yeah, so it stays in place. It will help reduce the fire ants. Okay.
How about the spot treat with Android? How's that work?
Spot treat with Android. Yeah. Yeah, you can do that.
That's what I do. I spot treat. They just kind of laugh at me and just move.
They move around. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe do both.
You can do both.
Spot treat with Android.
But Top Choice is pretty good. That's what commercial people use, Top Choice. It's a little expensive, but it lasts a long time. It has a residual action because it kind of locks up and binds the soil. So it's very, very, very effective. And it works on other insects.
Can a homeowner buy that at retail?
No, you can't. You have to buy it online. Okay.
Now, question, when I do apply it, do I have to wet it? Because when I spot tree, you kind of have to wet it down.
Yeah, you have to water it in.
Okay.
Get it activated. Okay?
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Have an outstanding day.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks,
appreciate
Jeff.
It.
Watch where you walk.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great that's a great question. Do appreciate you sharing that with us.
Fire ants tear me up as bad as poison ivy.
Guys.
Oh, yeah.
Rough stuff.
Yeah.
The worst bite I've ever gotten, though, was a brown recluse. Three different times I've been
bit by brown recluse three different times.
Yeah, once in my bicep.
That's amazing.
When I got bit by the fire in my bicep, my arms were bigger than yours. Oh. The one arm. It looked like Popeye.
Really?
And it eats the flesh somehow.
Yeah.
And I could stick my pinky finger in the hole that was made by the rotten flesh. Yeah. That wasn't good. Then the next one bit me behind my ear. These were all several years apart. Behind my ear. And the side of my head swelled up. And the problem with that one was the swelling messed up my equilibrium because of where your cochlea is in there. Mm-hmm. Messed up. So I couldn't drive or hardly walk because of the dizziness. That passed. And I was okay. The worst brown recluse bite I ever got.
You got bit on your ass?
On my right butt cheek.
And how would that be worse?
My right butt cheek.
You had a lot of padding there.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Insulation.
It swelled up like Oprah on her worst day. This giant butt cheek.
You sat down and you had a list.
Here's the problem. There was so much fluid in that swelling.
Yeah.
And I'd sit down, it would just hurt and hurt and hurt. Yeah. And then it would stop. I'm like, oh, thank God, it's better. Uh-huh. And then when you stood again, all that fluid from the swelling moved and it hurt again. I was like, holy smoly.
It's all caused by bacteria that they carry in their...
Is that what it is? I don't know what it is. They should brush their darn teeth.
Yeah, I'll tell
you. Man, that was uncomfortable.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Brown recluse and black widows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the problem with the brown recluse, when you get bit by... one of my workers just got bit by one. But when you get bit by one, you don't feel it.
Oh, no, I didn't know in either case.
Right, you don't feel it at all.
Uh-huh.
You know? And this is an insect that you know, there's not much you can do. You know, they're everywhere. Yeah.
But the one that got me on my butt cheek.
You know, it's amazing that I've never been, being outside as much as I have, you know, I've never been bit by a brown recluse.
And thank you for not asking how the brown recluse managed to bite me on my butt cheek.
I was wondering, I didn't want to ask how he climbed on underneath all your clothing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, were you climbing around naked underneath the house again?
I was in the woods.
Okay, in the woods, going natural, air bathing in the woods again?
No, nothing like that.
Okay.
Nothing like that.
All right.
But all this stuff about bugs reminds me about termite. As we shared, the fire ant is very good to hunt and kill termites. There's so much information about termite that it's important that you can distill it all in a way so you make good decisions.
Right.
We always, always, always recommend at HomePro, when you're buying a home, everyone should get a WDO. That is the wood-destroying organism inspection, so you know the status. It's not just termites. It's six or eight different pests plus wood decay fungi. So it's very important. And often people say, well, the house I'm buying is on a termite bond, so I don't need to get a wood destroying organism, a WDO report, because the company who's managing the bond, they come out regularly and check for termites. Well, that is true, but that's only one pest. It's specifically subterranean termite. Doesn't count drywood termites or old house boards,
house beetles. Intended.
Yeah, that's not good. That's usually for drywood termites.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
Yes.
How much is that? Depending on the size of the house, it probably starts at about $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Probably moves up very rapidly from that. It is not inexpensive.
Right.
And everything that's living must be extracted from the house.
Yes.
One of the reasons it's so expensive to tent your house, in addition to the physical expense of putting on the tent and fumigation and the chemicals, is the liability insurance for those fumigation companies. And I believe there's only one that still does it in our area, and everyone subcontracts it to them. Might be two. Every year, it seems like some homeless person or somebody's cat, someone makes their way back into the home after it's been tented, and when they fumigate, all life is over.
Right.
It's not just the termites, the chemical and the fumigation.
You know, every house in California is fumigated when it's sold.
Really?
Yeah, because of drywood termites.
They tent it?
Tent it.
I'll be darned. Is that some statute?
I think so. We've
got way too many rules in California.
Yeah.
Anyway, a place to go to get these types of answers. Here's a website for you. WDOHelp.com. WDOHelp.com. And when it doesn't matter whether you're buying or selling or you just want to know about these issues, it can get some baseline information, not for sale. Just let me understand the WDO process. Let me understand these various chemicals. What's the state's position, you know, from the department and whatnot. So WDOHelp.com, easy place to go to, get information. It's a lot like when we chat about water softening and other things. There's sales, and then there's objective information. You always want to get objective information. That way, when you hear the sales position, which is right and responsible, you know, you can't buy anything if somebody didn't sell it to you, but you'll understand what's being told to you. You'll have the right questions, and you'll also be armed with what reasonable answers might be. It's 720 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right back on the phone to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 725 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you're with us. If you'd like to join us, happy to have you. All you need to do is give us a call, 855-765-1045. We've instructed our producer, Scott, if you're calling from the International Space Station, we promise you will never be on hold. Over to Arlington, checking in with Chris to see if we can help him rebuild his lawn. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you, sir?
We are awesome. What happened to your lawn?
Well, over the last 3 years with the hurricanes, it seems like I had an increased problem with the dollar weed. And by treating the dollar weed, it seems like I've killed off my lawn. And there's one spot in the back of the yard that always seems wet no matter what. It's the last part to dry out.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you go with dollar weed as a ground cover?
No, that's not the object.
Did I get that wrong?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that last spot is just not really doing well and never really does well. So what I would say, you get some fill dirt or some topsoil and raise that area up.
That's what I was thinking. I wanted to go in there with a rototiller, till it up, break off the top, all the weeds.
Yeah, I would just spray the weeds. Rototillering for lawns is not an accepted practice anymore. It's now become, you know, unacceptable. But the reason that it's not done anymore is because it disturbs the mycorrhizans in the things that grass need to grow. And people don't realize that grass, you know, when it puts its roots down, it relies on mycorrhizans and other funguses and things that have a commensalism with relationship with the grass. Symbiotic relationship with the grass, and the grass needs them to help, you know, digest their food, so to speak. It's like when we have bacteria in our stomach to help us digest this food. So when you rototill, you destroy that ecosystem, and the grass needs that ecosystem. So nowadays they do not rototill, nor do they recommend rototill, and that's backed up with university studies. You can look
at any university study.
Just fill dirt on top. Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, sir. How do you feel about mulching versus bagging the grass clippings?
I like mulching the grass clippings, of course, because, you know, you're putting that back into your environment. And the thing is sometimes because the grass, St. Augustine, gets a lot of nitrogen, you'll mow and then you'll have a thick layer. Anything over a half, this is a great question too. Very good question. Is anything over a half inch would be detrimental because then the amount of rain that the grass would have to receive. So if you get a light amount of rain, the dead grass is going to absorb most of the rain. Okay. And so in order to accelerate that, by using mill organite or green edge or even fish emulsion, any organic product, or even just spraying your yard with Coca-Cola, but that's going to accelerate the decomposition of the thatch and adding that back into your soil, which is beneficial. Okay, that's definitely beneficial. So that, I think, if you understand what to look for, and as far as the thatch and how thick it needs to be, I think you understand what to do in case you have that problem, then you're going to be better off definitely allowing the grass to remain in place, the clippings to remain in place.
Okay, so some occasional mulching is good for it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, because you're refeeding the grass. You know, you're putting that nitrogen right back into the soil. and you're feeding the bacteria. And if you have a healthy soil, what happens is that the nitrogen gets fixed. And well, how does that happen? Is that all the the small ecological groups going to growing in your soil, and the bacteria and the fungus, they absorb this nitrogen and they hold it in place. And when they die, they release the nitrogen. So that cycle continues on and on. That's why it's so important that soils that are rich in organic material are normally going to be healthy areas for plants to grow, because it's refeeding itself, holding the nitrogen in place, and recycling it. And you're going to basically doing the same thing by when you allow the thatch to remain in place.
All right. I appreciate your time. I'll do some occasional organite and mulching. I appreciate it, gentlemen.
Have a great day, Chris. Bye. 7:30 here at News 104.5 on Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Way back. It is 7:37 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you're with us. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. If you need me, go homepro.com. Needing Larry? Larry'sGarden.com. Heading out to Ponte Vedra Beach. Check in with Sean to figure out what's going on with his lemon tree. Welcome, Sean.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're great. Good. Tell us about it. What are you seeing?
So we picked up this lemon tree. It's got to be maybe 3 foot tall, 4 foot tall, about a year and a half ago. And we planted it in the backyard just for fun. It's some pretty, good brown looking soil. We're not really big into gardening that much, but we figured we'd take a shot at it. And we knew that it would take a few seasons for it to get fruit. Mm-hmm. But about a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago at this point, it started to bear fruit. And at this point, the lemons are about 2 to 3 inches. They're rock hard and they're green. And we jokingly thought maybe we got a lime tree, but we took one of the ones that was low enough and didn't look that good, and we cut it open, and sure enough, it's a lemon.
Right.
The issue that we're having is the tree's only about 3.5-4 foot tall. It's got to be every bit of 5 or 6 foot wide. And these lemons are huge. I don't know when they're going to ripen to full. And they're weighing the branches down, and right. Just don't know what to do to prune it and make it look good.
That's a great question, because, with sometimes on young trees, they'll produce fruit, which is, not bad, because you want to enjoy, the fruit. But because it sounds like it's a Ponderosa lemon, big, large lemon, but you want to reduce the load, okay? So, take some of the fruit off, or leave a few. The ones on the branches that you suspect that cannot support that weight, you can remove all the fruit, or you could brace the branch up so it can continue producing that fruit for you. But reducing the load is the best method. And, sometimes you want to remove all the fruit if you wanted to. The reduced load is also going to allow the tree to mature faster, because right now it's concentrating on producing those fruits, so it's using all the nutrients in there, all of its reserve to produce those, so less on the growth. But reduce the load by, I don't know how many pieces of fruit do you have? 10 or 15?
Without exaggeration, about 10 or 12.
Yeah, 10 or 12, that's what I figured. You could cut it in half, or, and then that, or brace up. And then make sure you put some a generous amount of fertilizer on it, because it is a little bit stressful for a young tree to produce that much. Okay?
When do you think they would be ready?
Probably about 2 more months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I feel it's early.
So I'll go prune it. And the last question I had is the branches, some of them only start maybe 4 or 5 inches off the ground. Is that something that I should prune the lower branches to make it where it's a taller, fuller tree?
4 or 5 inches off the ground. That sounds does those branches go straight up?
Look like no, they go straight out in every direction.
Yeah, okay. That seems that is the rootstock. The rootstock, if it's 4 or 5 inches off the ground, it's breaking or coming out, that's the rootstock. Those should be removed. The tree is two different trees. It's the fruit bearing portion, which is the above ground portion, and then it has a rootstock. And what they do is that's a union that they put those two together, and sometimes the rootstock will start growing vigorously. The rootstock's used or determined to use that type of rootstock because it's vigorous and its root system is very, very good. And the fruit portion is, you know, because it produces great fruit. But they put those two trees together. And right at that point where they come together is the bud union. And the bud union sometimes reduces the rootstock. But the rootstock will actually take over the fruit-bearing tree. So you want to definitely remove those. If it's 4 or 5 inches off the ground, it is definitely the rootstock, the lower portion of the tree. Okay? Remove.
Very good.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Sean. I think he was bragging. I got a 3-foot tree with 15 lemons.
You got
That's
a
40-foot
tree, you got 10 lemons. Okay.
My boat's too big.
What's up with that?
Oh, my.
I don't know nothing about it, but I'm still pretty, you know, you have your garden in for 10 years and still.
I was listening at the break, and for some number of months now, Morton Salt's been a sponsor of the show.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for that. However, I am not enthused about carrying Morton Salt.
No, you're not enthused about carrying
it. What I am enthused about is having someone else carry the Morton Salt into my home, put it into my water softener so I can be done with that. Our friends at Affordable Water do that.
Right.
And it's really no more expensive. It might be $1 a bag at the most. But essentially, for no additional cost, they'll come over from Affordable Water. They'll put you on a schedule. They'll fill it all up. It's all easy. If it's on the outside, they won't even need to talk to you.
No sweat, no mess.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'll even take the bag with them. So
you don't have to remember it.
It's a good thing to do.
Take it off your calendar.
While they're there also, they're looking at your equipment to assure everything is doing what it's supposed to be doing. And if you have difficulties, their service department is second to none. Very, 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 very few of the places that sell water softening or other treatment equipment also have the skill set and the parts available to service it. So that's important, too. No matter where you purchase your equipment from, Affordable Water can deliver the salt and can do regular maintenance as well as repair those things that are damaged. And I'll tell you something else really cool. At Home Pro Inspections, we've got this great 18-month warranty program. 18 months. I'm still confused why people buy 12-month warranties. But anyway, includes water softener coverage. So if you have a Home Pro Inspection, you get the 18-month warranty. It covers your water softening equipment. That way, as Affordable Water's coming, they're doing your salt with regular thing, and they go, oh, it stopped working. It's now broke. File a claim, warranty company, and then they're actually giving the money to you so that Affordable Water can repair it. How's that for a symbiotic relationship?
And also, you get a roof warranty.
And the roof warranty is for 5 years.
5 years.
Which is really completely crazy. It boggles my mind. There are still real estate agents who are referring 12-month warranties when the 18 is available. Mm-hmm. And they're still referring home inspection companies that don't offer the 5-year warranty. That's all included, the 5-year warranty, in the cost of the home inspection. So at GoHomePro.com, you can solve that. And I wanted to share that. And AffordableWaterJacks.com, they take care of my equipment. You don't have any. Mm-hmm. You don't have a well, but they take care of my well equipment. They do my aerator, all my stuff for me. And I've got no problems, and I like those guys, and they never try to sell me anything. When I have questions, they answer, and I say, oh, gosh, what? Yeah, I'd like that. And other times I go, oh, nah, I don't need that. They're like, okay, you know, we'll be back when you need me. So
friends don't let friends buy homes without a home inspection or a warranty.
That's true. Friends don't let friends carry salt either.
Yes, okay.
Hey, another sponsor I heard on the show we have, and I'm grateful for them, too, is Indeed. One of the reasons I'm happy about Indeed being a sponsor of the show is we have multiple ads on Indeed at HomePro. We are looking for home inspectors. We are looking for great home inspectors, that is. If you're a slug, don't call.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try to remember.
Home inspectors, outside sales people for our marketing staff, as well as customer service people inside. So if you've enjoyed the show, you might enjoy working at HomePro, and we've got a lot of nice people working for us. And you can get that through Indeed or go to GoHomePro.com and do that. So it's kind of neat when we have positive relationships with many of the sponsors of the show.
Yes.
I like that.
It is.
It's more than just, you know, them doing what they do. It's like, wow, I know these people. I like these people. I trust these people. Which reminds me about roofing. When you go to buy a new roof, It's critical, 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 critical that you also have new metal flashings.
Absolutely.
When roofs,
unless you got copper already in place, right?
Well, copper's a metal.
Okay, but if you had copper already in place,
I'll spot you. If you've got copper, it might still be good.
There's about one in a zillion that would have that.
Yeah, for those three people in the greater Jacksonville area with metal flashings, or copper flashings. Anyway, typically the point of failure on a roof is the intersections.
Valleys.
And valleys, intersections, and penetrations. And that's when they fail, that's not a good thing. If they have not yet failed, yet you choose to buy new shingles and you don't replace these flashings, you really leave the primary vulnerability in place. And I'll tell you when I see this most often. When you have a stucco home where the roof goes up against a sidewall, like a two-story or a balcony or whatever, those flashings are difficult and expensive to change. It often requires cutting the stucco, replacing the stucco, the flashing, and then replacing the stucco. It is honest to say that that's not cheap. It's also honest to say that that is the single greatest vulnerability in a roof. And I've been on multiple consultations troubleshooting, why does my new roof leak? The new roof leak because the old flashings are still in place. They just won't go another 20 years. It's not good. Then the question I get was, well, shouldn't the roofer have replaced them? In the perfect world, yes, and should also charge you to do so. So in that competitive pricing world, sometimes the roofer may share with you the flashings look pretty good. You may want to just continue on with those for another 20 years. And yes, that's an economic decision, and yes, it's usually a bit short-sighted. So flashings, penetrations, valleys, where your plumbing equipment comes through, the plumbing stack, all of that needs to be replaced when you do your roof in order to put you in the best position. And what's interesting, so like my friends at Fidus, as you're aware, they do that 25-year or 50-year golden pledge warranty. If you didn't change the flashings, they cannot warrant it. So you can't expect to have the warranty cover something that you didn't replace at the time of the roof. I'm pretty
passionate
about
that. Let me ask you this about the flashings, because, I'm always curious. What would be the best flash? I mean, with copper is very expensive. That is the best.
Yeah.
Or zinc.
Well, it's not, zinc is not the flashing. Zinc is the coating on the galvanized material.
Okay.
So when I say galvanized, that's a zinc coating.
Okay. So what would be the best flashing material you could put up?
That's a tough one. So let's agree that copper is probably the best long term.
Right.
It's so terribly expensive. It's so difficult to find people with the skill set to bend it. So I really think just changing good old galvanized flashings each time you do it is fine.
Okay.
And a lot of times people on the drip edge, the flashing on the drip edge, they'll often have that in different colors.
Painted,
painted.
Right.
Not hand painted, but it's baked enamel on there. So cost effectively for the vast majority of us humans, that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you're fortunate enough to have the economics to do copper flashings, very candidly, most people doing copper flashings are not doing asphalt shingle roofs.
Right, they're doing slate.
You see a lot with slate and tiles and that.
Because the roof's going to last 100 years.
At least. Yeah, it's truly a lifetime situation. It reminded me of one more thing about roofs.
Yeah.
It's allowable by the state statute for a home inspector not to go on a roof if it's more than 13 feet tall. They're required to have a 13-foot ladder. If it's beyond that, they can say, I didn't go there. You've got to be sure that your home inspection company is flying drones.
Right.
Ideally, they'll walk on it, but if they can't, you still want that drone there. We can get within, 2 inches of the surface and know exactly what you've got. So if they don't have the drone and they don't have that 25 or 30 or 40-foot ladder to get on the roof, you're really taking a big risk.
Right.
It didn't mean they did anything wrong. It just means you didn't get the totality of the protection.
Right, optimum.
So the infrared cameras, the drones, the warranties, it all plays together to protect. It's 7:50 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping back for the final segment featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back.
This is where Jacksonville turns first for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic alerts. News 104.5 WOKV. Find us on the iHeartRadio app. Listen every weekday morning from 5 until 9 a.m. for the latest breaking news. The exclusive five-day forecast from Action News Jack's First Alert Chief Meteorologist Mike Burris. And your triple team traffic every 6 minutes. Everywhere you go, listen using the iHeartRadio app for Apple and Android.
As a new homeowner and resident in Northern Florida, I know who I would call if and whenever I need my roof repaired. Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Kilmeade, here for my friends at J&M Roofing. You know them. They're the guys with the umbrella, and they've got you covered. When storms with damaging winds hit the area, we get flooded with storm chaser roofing companies. They show up. They make a lot of promises. Then they disappear. J&M Roofing will be there to stand behind their work before, during, and after the storm chasers have left town. Don't trust the most important part of your home to anyone but J&M Roofing.
Find J&M Roofing online at jandmroofing.com.
Hi, Stan Nagel for Energy Seal Foam Insulation, reminding you that summer is here, so you don't want to be hot this year. Wouldn't it be nice this summer to dial your air down to 72 degrees and pay less money for it? Call Energy Seal and it's fixed. 888-306-3626. Look us up on the web, energyseal.today.com. Whether it's your home, your office, or any metal building, Energy Seal will keep you cool this summer. Book now before we're busy and save 20% off our summer rates. Call 888-306-3626. Look us up on the web, energyseal.today.com.
Hi, I'm Larry of Larry's Garden. One of my favorite things about the South is great weather, which means more time for outside. And at Larry's Garden, we design, install, and maintain every outdoor project. Need to replace a cracked driveway? We do it. Need a patio, pergola, deck, or pavers? We do it. Let one company, Larry's Garden, complete your entire project. No subcontractors. All work is done by Larry's Garden employees. Low water landscapes, sod replacement, landscape designs that are unbelievable, a complete landscape makeover, we do it. Let one company, Larry's Garden, complete your entire project. Weekly maintenance for communities and commercial locations is also available. For more information, visit larrysgarden.com or call 346-1970. Design, install, maintain. One company, complete project, Larry's Garden.
The lowest fee in real estate is coming soon to Jacksonville. There's no longer any reason to pay 6% to sell your home. Introducing Rex. Rex sells homes for the lowest fee in the industry. 2% total, saving thousands of dollars per transaction. With Rex, you get a full-service team backed by technology. They don't market homes the way traditional agents do. Rex uses advanced digital marketing tactics to directly target hundreds of qualified buyers to your home the moment it goes on the market. And Rex charges only 2% total, not the 6% commission your local broker expects. Get started now by calling 833-REX-HOME. That's 833-REX-HOME. Since 2015, Rex has saved homeowners millions of dollars in fees across California, Texas, New York, and Colorado. Now it's your time, Jacksonville, to sign on for a simplified and cost-savings approach to buying or selling a home. To get started, call now at 833-REX-HOME. That's 833-REX-HOME. Rex Real Estate Exchange, Incorporated.
Hello, beautiful. I'm Amy Errett, founder of Madison Reed, a hair color company I named after my daughter. One of the things I value most in life is time. Time to spend with my daughter, time to spend with family, and the time I put into my company that's reinventing the way women color their hair. The busiest, most successful women I know use Madison Reed, the amazing hair color hack. In under an hour and for less than $25, Madison Reed delivers gorgeous, shiny, multidimensional, healthy-looking hair with an ammonia-free formula. You'll look like you just came from a salon, but the reality is you have more me time to do what you love. Things get busy. Let us take care of you and your hair. Find your perfect shade at madison-reed.com and get 10% off plus free shipping on your first color kit. Use code MOM. That's code MOM. Try it. Love it. That's the beauty of Madison Reed.
The WOKV First Alert Forecast.
A 6 on the WOKV weather meter. Partly to mostly cloudy as we head through your Saturday. We'll be seeing some scattered heavy downpours developing and pushing inland through the day and into the afternoon. We'll see high temperatures in the mid-80s at the beaches, upper 80s to near 90 inland. Partly cloudy with some lingering showers early this evening, then drying out. Overnight lows will dip down to the lower to mid-70s, near 90 Sunday with a few widely scattered showers and storms. With your First Alert Forecast, I'm Action News Jax meteorologist Garrett Beaton-Ball for News 104.5 WOKV.
The 2019 hurricane season is underway. Get daily updates from Action News Jack's First Alert Chief Meteorologist Mike Burrish. Tips from emergency managers and lessons learned from past years. All in the WOKV Hurricane Guide. Presented by Clay Electric Co-op on WOKV.com and in the WOKV app.
7:56 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you're with us. And that reminder, we're here every single Saturday on News 104.5 from 6 until 8 a.m. Also, you can watch the whole show or listen to the whole show, WOKV.com, on the podcast or on Facebook at Home Pro Inspections. You can actually watch the audio and the video of the entire show. Let's check in with Terry over in Fleming Island, see if we can help him with his zoys of fungus. Welcome, Terry.
Good morning, guys. Thanks. You got a great show.
Thank you.
Hey, my lawn, it looks like it might be getting fungus, and I've had that problem probably the last 3 years. I apply a preventative, and then it's all right. So I'm not sure if it's that or maybe it needs some nitrogen. So I bought a bag of ironite, and I also bought a bag of fungus preventative. So my question is, can I apply both of them down today, or do I need to do one first and then the other one maybe a week or so later?
Both at one time. Both at one time, no problem. But I would suggest, you say you have a habitual problem, that you look at examine the roots of the grass, make sure that the roots are healthy. And, you know, how many years has your lawn been down?
Probably since 2012, 13.
Okay. If you can easily push a shovel into the dirt, then there's something wrong with the roots. Because normally, if you've had a zoysia lawn down that long, you cannot get a shovel into the soil.
And I can, because I added added onto the sprinkler system this spring, because I had some areas that didn't seem like they were getting covered. And, I had to work on it to get the shovel through it.
Okay. So, okay, good. Then you're in good shape. You probably have some topical, fungus there. And I think that that'll probably rectify the problem.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
So I'm going to work. Here I go.
A little shovel jockey time this weekend.
Yeah, it's amazing. Zoysia, if it's been down for, three or four years, you can't get the shovel into it.
Pretty dense.
Dense.
Is that how the reason it does so well in drought?
Yes, absolutely. It has some serious root system.
Almost like magic.
Yep.